If you have your Bibles, open to 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Obviously, if you've been out in the lobby, you may start to smell a little bit of turkey. They're starting to cook the turkeys for tonight. I'm getting excited about that. Although after smelling the turkey, I was almost a little ready for a nap. You know how that happens on Thanksgiving. You eat a little bit of turkey and then doesn't matter how much sleep you had the night before, you're inevitably going to fall asleep on the couch watching football, or at least that's what I do. But I love Thanksgiving. Personally, I love Thanksgiving because of the different traditions that Thanksgiving kind of brings about. I think Thanksgiving brings about more traditions, maybe even more so than Christmas, at least for me. There are just certain things that I remember as a kid about Thanksgiving. I remember all the family gathering at my grandparents' house. I remember all the guys watching football and all the ladies prepping the meal. And then I remember us all eating. I remember there was a grown-up table and like a kid's table. I don't know if any of you had that growing up. Okay, you had a kid's table. It was typically like a card table that all of us kids, kind of 10 of us kind of hovered around. And then all the adults sat at the real nice table. We had paper plates. They had like all the fine china, you know, that type of thing. Then for our family, whenever one tradition is once the food, everybody is done eating, the ladies then would go and sit down. And the men would do all the dishes. That was just a tradition that we did. And it didn't matter. A couple of men are like, whoa, hold on. Don't start that kind of tradition in my house, right? But that was something my grandfather started. And he said all the cooks would sit. And then all those who didn't cook would go in and we'd do all the dishes. And they were china, so it had to be like hand washed and hand dried and everything like that. And it was a process. And everybody had a job. You know, and as you got older, you got promoted to different jobs, and you know, it was a thing. But I love Thanksgiving, and one thing I really love about Thanksgiving is one thing we would do. I remember this as a kid. Before we would eat, my grandfather, he would ask everybody to say something they were thankful for. Okay, and if you like, I'm thankful for trees, okay? He would make you stop and he'd go back to you and he'd be like, no, something you're really thankful for. And that's the nice thing about Thanksgiving. It gives us a time where we really stop and we really think about all the blessings that we have. Okay, and we really begin to think about all the things that we're thankful for. I do also understand that sometimes at Thanksgiving and at holidays, it kind of brings up some other memories that may not be too pleasant, but during this time, we can really stop and think about the blessings that we have and the things that we're thankful for. And that's why I love Thanksgiving. I'm excited about tonight as we have our church's family Thanksgiving dinner. And I'm really thankful that we're not having to go to the community center this year. We're going to be able to have it right here at the church. This is the first time we've had it here, at least since I've been here as the pastor. And we're going to have all the food sit out there in the lobby. And then we'll have tables and chairs set up in here. So that will be tonight at 5:30. Everybody's invited. We'd encourage you all to come. And if you can help us by bringing a side, dessert, or a salad, that'd be wonderful. The turkeys are already cooking. And they're already smelling great. So we're excited about that. But 1 Corinthians chapter 16 is where we're going to be at. And I felt it would be beneficial for us this Sunday before Thanksgiving to look at 1 Corinthians 16. Now, I know we haven't looked at 1 Corinthians 15 yet, but don't worry. We're going to get to that next week. I wanted to skip a chapter because I really believe what this chapter is talking about has a lot to do with thankfulness, has a lot to do with the idea of the blessings that we have. Look at the first four verses with me. It'll be up here on your screens or it'll be in your bulletins as well. It says, but now about the collection for the Lord's people. Do what I told the Galatian churches to do. On the first day of every week, each one of you should set aside some sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will have to be made. Then when I arrive, I will give letters of introduction to the men you approve and send them with your gift to Jerusalem. If it seems advisable for me to go also, they will accompany me. So it says about the collection for the Lord's people. So Paul, here as we know, the whole context of the book of 1 Corinthians, Paul is addressing issues, okay, within the church of Corinth. And he is kind of laying some ground rules for them in several different areas. Now he transitions in chapter 16, the last chapter of this book, and he talks about giving. He says, now for the collection of the Lord's people. So what does giving have to do with Thanksgiving, right? What does giving have to do with being thankful? And I really believe this. Gratitude is a great motivation for our giving. I really believe that gratitude is a great motivation for our giving. When we realize that all we have belongs to the Lord, and we see the things that we have, the money we have, the blessings that we have are all come from the Lord, that thankfulness many times motivates us to give. But when we see it as ours and we see it as something we've worked for, something we're entitled to, it develops this sense of mind so everybody else kind of keep their hands off. So gratitude is a great motivation for giving. And in 1 Corinthians 16, we're going to see a few principles that Paul sets out in regards to biblical giving. Number one, biblical giving is every believer's personal responsibility. It says, now about the collection for the Lord's people. Do what I told the Galatian churches to do, and on the first day of every week, each one of you. So he's not saying, okay, this certain class or this certain group of people, you're the ones that are supposed to give. Everybody else, you don't have to. What he's saying, each one of us, every one of you has a responsibility in this area. No one is exempt. Not only are we not exempt, but Paul seems to give set a priority to giving. He says, the first day of every week. See, Paul's stressing the importance here of systematic giving, not just kind of giving haphazardly. And many times that's what happens with us. Many times we, instead of kind of giving on a systematic basis, we just kind of give haphazardly. You know, oh, I didn't bring my checkbook this week, or let me see what I have, and just kind of haphazardly. It's when we think about it, when it comes to our mind, that's typically what happens. But Paul says that the first day of every week, each one of you should give. Mark chapter 12, there's a story that we see about giving. It's a great story. It says, Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put and watched the crowd putting their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples, Jesus said, truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. Let's stop right there for a minute. I love this story. I love it for a couple of reasons. One, what you see Jesus doing. Jesus, he's watching people as they're giving their offering, okay? He's just watching them. And I really believe he's not watching to see how much they're giving, but really how they're giving, if that makes sense, what their heart's like, what their motivation is like behind their giving. But what I also love is how he called his disciples to him. You see that this idea of discipleship is throughout Jesus' life. Every time that he had an opportunity to teach his disciples, he took it. And this was an opportunity for him to teach. And he looks and says, you see that widow over there? Notice she just gave very, very little. And I'm sure some of the disciples were like, yeah, I know, it's just a little bit, Jesus. But Jesus goes, but you don't understand is she gave more than anybody else. Now, math-wise, that doesn't add up, right? If other people are throwing in large sums of money, but she's only putting a little. But listen to what Jesus said. He says, she had put more into the treasury than all the others. Verse 44, he said, they all gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything, all she had to live on. Jesus wasn't concerned about the amount as much as the heart. See, giving isn't about how much we have. It's about how much we're thankful for and understanding the responsibility each one of us have. See, the widow didn't have much. As a matter of fact, this couple copper coins she had was very well all that she had. That was probably all of the money that she had. Jesus even said she put all that she had in. So this widow, and that's, we also have to stay in the context. Widows during that time had no way of providing for themselves. They were widows. They didn't have a husband to take care of them. So this woman literally gave all that she had. Now, please understand this. I'm not advocating that you all go empty your bank accounts tomorrow and give all that you have, okay? That's not what Jesus is saying. But what Jesus is saying is that it's about the heart. It's about what we do with the blessings that we have. I remember the very first time that I ever tithed. I was probably about 16 years old. And my paycheck was like $96, right? It wasn't very much. And I remember my youth pastor telling me, well, you need to give 10% of that. And I said, okay, so that's $9.60. I remember writing out a check for $9.60 and put it in the plate. And I felt so proud. You know, it was like this sense of like, man, I gave and this is awesome. And then I remember my next check was like $212. So then I started doing the math. I was like, 21, what? I got to give $21 now? What? I like $9 much better, right? It was much better when I gave $9. That was much more. See, what we see here in this passage here, says they gave out of the wealth, but she gave out of her poverty, put in everything. See, she didn't think, when I have more, I'll give more. She just said, I'm just going to give out of everything that I have. I want to give because that's what the Lord has called us to do. From the widow, we're reminded of what Jesus said. When you're faithful in little, you'll be faithful in much. She reminds us that we have a responsibility to give. Second thing, number two, biblical giving should be proportional. Biblical giving should be proportional. Verse 2 of 1 Corinthians 16 says, on the first day of each week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income. In other words, the more blessed we are, it should reflect in our giving. While the amounts will be different, the heart should remain the same for each and every one of us. When we give out of a thankful heart of all that God has given us, I've had many people ask me, so how much should I give? Okay, like what, if I'm going to give, how much should I give? Where do we start at? Okay, what's the starting point? Malachi chapter 3. In verses 8 and 10, it says, will a mere mortal rob God? Yet you rob me. But you ask, how are we robbing you in tithes and offerings? You are under a curse, your whole nation, because you are robbing me. Bring the whole tithe into the storehouse, that there may be food in my house. Now listen as he goes, test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessings that there will not be enough room. There will not be room enough to store it. See, the Bible teaches this idea of 10%. Now, I do understand this. If you have never given before, giving 10% is a shock to your system, right? Because that's a lot of money. It seems like a lot of money to give if you've never given before. So this is what I would encourage you to do is to start somewhere. I always encourage people, start somewhere. Okay, while 10% may be a shock initially, if you think, okay, I make $3,000 a month, $300 a month, that may be a shock to our system, especially if you've never given before. That may be a difficult place to start. So I'd encourage you to start somewhere. But what I love here, but also realize this, many of us, some of us are, we have debt and we're riddled with debt. So when we look at the bills that we have coming in each and every month, and we look at the money we have coming in each and every month, and it creates this sense of like anxiety, and this sense of like pressure, and this sense of fear of how I'm going to meet these obligations that I have. Whether it's I got into them because of some poor financial decisions, whatever it may be, there's still obligations that I have, and it creates a sense of just anxiety within us. So when we hear 10%, we almost laugh and say, well, you don't get my financial situation. I don't have 10% to give. So I always encourage people, just start somewhere. Just start somewhere. Allow the Lord to show you what that somewhere looks like. So don't be discouraged if you think, I can't do the 10%. Just do where the Lord may lead you. Start somewhere. I love how he says, test me in this. God says, bring your tithe into the storehouse. He goes, test me in this. And then he says this, test me in this regard. See if I don't open up blessings for you. See if I don't open up blessings. See, giving isn't as much about what we have, but rather how much we trust. See, giving truly is a trust. It's how much do we trust God to provide? Do we believe God can provide? I believe all of us would say, yes, I believe God can provide. So many times giving puts feet to that belief. There's no other way to really truly trust him, and then other than we sometimes step out on faith and say, okay, God, I'm just going to start. God, I'm just going to start. I'm going to start somewhere. God, I'm going to start with this amount. I'm going to start somewhere. I'm nervous, a little nervous about this, a little scared. So, God, I'm going to need you to come through. And that's what God says. God says, test me in this. Try me in this and see if I don't open up blessings for you. Number three, biblical giving should not be motivated by pressure. Look at what Paul says. It says, on the first day of each week, each one of you should set aside a sum of money in keeping with your income, saving it up so that when I come, no collections will. All right. somebody want to go check on our kiddos? So Paul says, when I come, that no collection should be made when I come. Now, that's interesting. Why would Paul say no collection should be made? Because when Paul would come, he didn't want people to give because Paul was there. Okay, he was one who helped start this church. So when he came, he didn't want people to think, oh, well, Paul's here, so now I have to give. He just said, you know what? Collect now, so when I come, no collections have to be made. See, the idea of it is this, is giving shouldn't be motivated by pressure. Biblical giving shouldn't need high pressure tactics. If I'm being very honest with you, I hate talking about giving. If I'm just being very transparent, I hate talking about giving. I hate talking about tithing. Not because I don't think it's important. Not because I don't do it. I give, I tithe, I do all those things, but I hate talking about it because, to be frank with you, I've seen a lot of pastors who, when they talk about it, man, they do it so well, and I don't think I do it very well. And I hate talking about it because I don't ever want people to feel guilty when it comes to giving. I don't ever want people to feel like they're pressured into giving. I've actually been in a service where I've literally seen the guys, after the offering was passed, he said, you know, we need to pass this one more time. I don't think enough was collected. Okay? I've seen that before, okay? And I never want to go there, if that makes sense. But I do believe this. I believe that we should present the opportunity and the benefits of giving. Because when we do that, it allows us to stretch our faith. When we give, it's a stretch of faith for us, each and every time. It's a stretch of faith, but allows us to trust. It allows us to trust God. It allows us to trust Him. So I believe we present the opportunity and allow God to impress on people's hearts. But I also believe this, the more thankful we are for what God has done, what He's given to us, our natural response is to give. The more thankful for we offer the things that He's already given us, our natural response is then to give back. Look what he says here in 2 Corinthians. 2 Corinthians is an interesting book. It's another letter to the church of Corinth. And it's written a year later. Okay, so it's a year after 1 Corinthians was written. It's written a year later. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 6 to 11. He says, remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly. Whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. As it is written, they have freely scattered their gifts to the poor, their righteousness endures forever. Now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for the food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. So you will be enriched in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. As through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. A couple practical things from this passage. 2 Corinthians 9. When you give, give generously. When you give generously. It says, a person who sows generously will reap generously. Now this makes a lot of sense, okay? I have never attempted to garden because, you know, as I told you, I don't have a green thumb, okay? I plant something and ultimately it's going to die. But I understand this principle. If I plant one seed, I cannot expect a whole field of fruits and veggies, right? If I plant one seed, I can expect probably one plant. The more that I plant, more seeds that I plant, the more harvest I can expect. It's a very simple principle. And it works the same way in our giving. The more that we give, the more generous we are, the more expectations of God's blessing that we can see. So when we give, we need to give generously. In New York, we met a lady. We just simply called her Miss Barbara. She was one of the most generous people I have ever met. For whatever reason, she took my family and I under her wing when we moved to New York. Obviously, we were transplants, and Miss Barbara was born and raised in New York, and she called me Pastor Ryan and called Becca Lady Becca. That was Becca's name. And each Micah was Prince Micah, and she had names for all of her kids. But I can remember our first Thanksgiving there. She called our house and she says, "I have a gift I'm bringing you." And we said, "Okay." And she came over with this massive turkey. I mean, massive, that she had cooked and she had decorated. It was gorgeous. Like, I just wanted to take a picture of the thing, not actually eat it. It was phenomenal. I mean, it was way more turkey than I had ever seen in my life. I don't know how big this thing was, but it was gigantic. And we ate on the turkey and ate on the turkey, and there was still plenty of turkey left over. It wasn't a couple weeks later, she called Becca and she said, "Lady Becca, I'm coming to pick you up." And Becca's like, "Okay." She goes, "We're going grocery shopping." And Becca was like, "Do you need help grocery shopping?" And she's like, "No, I'm taking you grocery shopping." And Becca was like, "Miss Barbara, we're good. We've got all that we need." And she said, "Nope, I'm taking you grocery shopping." So she came, and Becca described this ordeal where Becca got very little, and Miss Barbara kept grabbing stuff and putting stuff in the cart, grabbing stuff and putting stuff in the cart. Checked out over $400 worth of groceries. And she goes, "I just wanted to bless you. Just wanted to say, just let you know I love you." Every year at Christmas, she literally would supply Christmas gifts for our entire family. This woman was unbelievably generous. I remember when we left New York. Remember, that was the one lady I was like, "We've got to talk to Miss Barbara." And she cried and she cried, and she just goes, "I know God is going to use you to do big things." And went to Illinois, and we kept in touch with her through the phone. And then right before Christmas, she called and she says, "I need your address." I said, "Okay." And she's like, "I'm sending you some money." She goes, "I got to do Christmas for your kids again. Even if you're not here, I got to do Christmas for your kids." This woman was unbelievably generous. I remember we were about a year later on our way to Texas, and I got a call on my phone from a number I didn't recognize. And I picked it up, and he was like, is this Ryan Whitley? And I was like, "It is." And he goes, "Do you know Barbara?" And I said, "Miss Barbara?" He goes, "Yes, I'm her son. She passed away last night. But wanted to make sure that you knew and make sure that you knew she loved you." This woman was unbelievably generous. And here's the thing. And she would tell me, she goes, "I give and I give and I give." And she goes, "God just keeps giving to me." She goes, "God just keeps giving to me." She goes, "So I just want to keep giving because that's just what God is doing with me." So when we give generously. And ultimately, Jesus is our example in this. Jesus is our example of giving generously. Look at John chapter 10. It says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. Now listen to this. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down on my own accord." What a beautiful thing Jesus said. Jesus said, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep." But then he says, "Listen, nobody is taking my life." In order, basically what he's saying, he goes, one day when you see me on a cross, and you see them beating me, and you see them nailing me to this cross, understand this, they're not taking my life from me. I'm giving it willingly. See, ultimate act of generosity. And then you go to when you see him on the cross, he says the words, "It is finished." And then after that, what does it say? It says, "He gave up his spirit." Or in other words, Jesus said, "Okay." I really believe this. Jesus could have hung on that cross for a month until he was ready to lay down his life. He said, it is finished, and he gave up his spirit. Jesus is our ultimate sign of giving generously. And if you're visiting with us today, this may be your first time to be inside Northside. My prayer for you, if you don't catch anything else, is that you catch the fact that God loves you enough. And he is crazy enough about you to send his one and only son, Jesus, to die on a cross for your sins. And Jesus did this willingly because we owed a debt that we could not pay. We all understand financial debt, and we all understand the burden that that can be. Spiritual debt is so much more because it's a debt that we can't pay. It's a debt that there's no way we can repay this debt. Jesus said, I'll cover it. I'll take care of it. So he willingly died on a cross for your sins so that you could be free, so that you could have healing, so you could be reconciled to God. Second thing we see from 2 Corinthians is when you give, give cheerfully. He told us not to give reluctantly, but give cheerfully. I believe that when the offering time comes during a church, there should be some smiles. We should be giving cheerfully. We shouldn't be like, oh gosh, okay. Maybe the first couple times it feels that way. It's like, okay, God, I'm going to need you to do something here. Because I don't know how the rest of this week's going to look. But as you give and as you begin to get into that, it should become something, a cheerful thing where you look forward to it. Because in the end, what happens is we get to be a part of what God is doing. And that's one of the hugest blessings about giving, is we get to be in on what God is doing. We've seen a lot of people accept Christ and a lot of people have been baptized over the last 3 years. Can I tell you, each and every one of you are a part of that? Because you give. All the missionaries we support around the world, Honest Feeding Center in Guatemala, we all have a part of that because we give. And that's why we should give cheerfully, because we know that as we give, God is going to take, even if it's a little bit, God is going to take that and he's going to use it and he's going to impact somebody with that. What a beautiful thing. God's going to take whatever that we give, so we should give cheerfully and understand that the money that we give is making an eternal impact. The last one, when you give, give expectantly. So what are we expecting? We're expecting God to supply our needs. Giving takes faith. Sometimes the math doesn't add up. But as we give, we can expect God to supply all of our needs. Now understand this. This is not a prosperity gospel. Okay, this is not saying you give and when you go home tomorrow, there's going to be a check for $1 million on your doorstep. Okay, that's not what we're saying. If you gave today, there may not be a check in the mail tomorrow. But it says God will always supply your needs. Sometimes that tank of gas lasts a little bit longer than what you thought. Sometimes that electric bill that you were expecting to be huge is lower than what you thought. Sometimes it's when you go out to eat and the waiter comes up to you and says, someone's already paid for your meal. God will supply all of your needs. I love what 2 Corinthians 9 verse 8 says. It says, and God is able to bless you abundantly. So then in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. It says God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, you will have exactly what you need. See, as we give, God supplies our needs. As we step out on faith, God is right there willing to catch us and ready to supply for our needs. Now, it doesn't say he supplies for all of our wants. That's a big difference, right? Our needs and our wants are differently. But he says he will supply for all of your needs. What Paul is saying, and we've said this often, is simply, you can't outgive God. When we give, God shows up. When we give, even if we're like the widow, and we're giving just a little bit that we have, and saying, God, I'm trusting you here. God says, test me. Watch what I'm going to do this week. Watch what's going to happen. I'll never forget the testimony. Somebody came up to me and said, you know what? I tithe for the first time. This was probably about a year ago. They said, I tithe for the first time, like an actual tithe, what my 10% was. And you won't believe it, my taxes went down. And my mortgage is lower. And it's the amount extra that I gave is what my mortgage went down. What is that? You can't outgive God. God always will bless us abundantly and supply for our needs. I've said this often, is God has never dropped a kid, right? He's not going to start with you. Dad, you remember when your kids were little? You tell them to jump. And they would just jump, right? They don't even think about it. They just jump because they expect you to what? They expect you to catch them. Because you're their dad. There's no way you're going to drop them, okay? They don't understand that we're human, and if we take our eye off of them for a second, there's a good chance they're going to drop, okay? They don't understand that. They just jump because they know dad's there and dad's going to catch them. It's a leap of faith for them. Each and every day, we take leaps of faith when it comes to our walk with God. Giving is a step of faith. It's a leap of faith. But I do know this with absolute certainty is God has never dropped one of us. And he's not going to look at you and be like, oh, my bad, I didn't see you jump. God is going to be there every step of the way. So let me close with this question. Does your giving reflect your thankfulness? Think about that for a moment. Does your giving reflect your thankfulness? How much are you thankful for? Does your giving reflect that? A few next steps. Number one, start somewhere. If you've never given, can I encourage you just to simply start somewhere? Ask God for an amount. So God, give me an amount you want. Give me an amount. Whatever that is, God, ask God for an amount. And then trust that he's going to supply for your needs. It's a step of faith, absolutely. But start somewhere. For some of you, 10% is too daunting right now. So start somewhere. The important thing is that you start somewhere and you do it on a systematic, consistent basis, which brings us to the next step. Number two, give consistently. It doesn't have to be every week. Maybe you give when you get paid, however that works out. Maybe you give once a month, but give consistently. Make it a systematic thing. Don't give haphazardly. Start somewhere and give consistently. And number three, practice cheerful giving. Our thanks motivates giving, which results in thanks. When we give and we give cheerfully, we're giving because we understand the principle of this is that all that we have belongs to God anyway. All that we have belongs to God. We think, well, I worked for it, I earned this, but it was God who gave you the ability to work. It was God who blessed you with the job that you do have. So all that we have belongs to God. So this is us. We're simply a caretaker, if that makes sense. We're simply a manager, is what we are. All that we have belongs to God, and God says, I want you to manage it. But he asks that we manage it well. He goes, I want you to manage it. That doesn't mean that you can't have any fun. That doesn't mean that you can't have nice things. It just simply means we are a manager. And for some, God has given us a lot to manage. For others, God has given us a little bit to manage. But God says this, we're just simply a manager. He goes, manage this, but manage it well. And giving back is a way to show God, we're managing what you've given us. And we're giving back to you. We're doing it in a cheerful way. We're doing it expecting you to provide for us. We're doing it expecting you to show up. God, the math doesn't make sense in my head. God, but I know that you are a God who can pour out blessings upon us, upon blessings. So God, we're stepping out on faith and we're trusting you. So start somewhere, give consistently, and practice cheerful giving. Will you bow your heads with me?